The Tom Woods Show, episode 1367.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I really hope you'll be vacationing with me this July in Alaska aboard the Contra Cruise. Bob Murphy and I are hosting the Libertarian Event of the Year. Alaska's on your bucket list, you know that, and what better way to visit than with a great crew of like-minded, wonderful folks, headlined by our special guests Gene Epstein and Brad and Deidre Berzer. Grab your cabin over at ContraCruise.com. And remember, Bob Murphy and I will be doing a live debate that will not be made available to the public, with Gene Epstein moderating. You've got to reserve that cabin. Head over to ContraCruise.com and we'll see you there. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Just thought I would talk about what just happened with Jordan Peterson. And I'm going to assume pretty much everybody listening to me knows who Jordan Peterson is. He's a professor of psychology over at the University of Toronto. He's also taught at Harvard University. He has been an academic sensation. He's the author of Maps of Meaning and a much better known book, 12 Rules for Life, which has been a smash bestseller leading to an international book tour, packed lecture halls, at least 100 million downloads of his lectures. It's unlike anything I can recall in my lifetime. And I know there are people out there who are critical of him. And yeah, I don't agree with him on everything either. And yes, I understand he's not a libertarian. That's true. But, you know, sometimes I get people saying, you know, you should talk to people other than just libertarians. And then I do that. And I get people saying, that guy's not a libertarian. You know, come on now, right? But the fact is, he's an insightful and interesting guy. And I know he has his critics. I know he has his critics even among my listeners. I know there are people who have problems with him, but none of that is the point. None of that is the point, particularly it's not the point of what I'm going to talk about today. Because first of all, even if all those criticisms were true, at this point in the history of Western civilization, what Jordan Peterson represents is more important and significant than what he even is. So even if all the criticisms of him were true, they completely missed the mark, because none of those criticisms have anything to do with why he is rejected and scorned by the left. They have nothing to do with that. So I don't say you have to hang on his every word, but he's a phenomenon. He's a phenomenon. And there's a reason he's a phenomenon. He is obviously speaking to a real emptiness that exists out there. He represents a bulwark against the spread of nihilism. That's, I think, how he conceives of what he's doing. So to me, that's a very, very important cultural phenomenon. And it's also been interesting to see that although the predictable lefty libertarian spokesman can be found to, of course, be condemning him because he's a normal bourgeois man who is simply repeating what would have been normal, boring, uninteresting bourgeois commonplaces even 30 years ago. So of course, this makes him the devil. What has been very pleasant for me is to note how many people who are culturally somewhat on the left, nevertheless, are quite drawn to him, recognize the value of what he's doing, and support him. I mean, that has been the real source of pleasure for me in all this. Is yes, of course, I know the shrill voices can't ever be, you know, they should just be ignored. But there are some folks who, nevertheless, even though, you know, they and I might have some disagreements on very important issues, they see the value in what Jordan Peterson is doing. So that's a good thing. Now, by the way, before I go into this, let me remind you that in this ebook that I did called Think for Yourself, where I've got some testimonies from professors who've been through the ringer with some of these people, you know who I mean, the anti-free speech people. In that book, you're not only going to read about the travails of, for example, Jordan Peterson, but you're also going to have a chance to discover the actual work the guy does, because he doesn't actually spend all his time talking about pronouns. I mean, he actually works for a living. And in there, you'd actually discover some of the actual work that he does. And it's very, very valuable. His stuff about past, present, and future authoring. I don't care what kind of critic you are of Jordan Peterson. That's going to help you. That's going to help you straighten out your life. So you definitely want to read that book. It doesn't cost you anything. And it's short and it's a quick read and you'll love it. So you can pick that up at againstthemob.com. I urge you to go get that, againstthemob.com. So here's what's going on. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but yesterday, I'm speaking to you now, Thursday, March 21st, 2019. Yesterday, Cambridge Divinity School released a tweet saying the following. Jordan Peterson requested a visiting fellowship at the Faculty of Divinity, and an initial offer has been rescinded after a further review. And Peterson has a response. Now, he's not saying that he's entitled to a fellowship. Nobody's entitled to a fellowship. What he is saying is that on the basis of his track record and on the basis of the interest shown in his work when he visited Cambridge, it didn't seem altogether implausible to think that there would be some value in his presence there. And he, while he was there, apparently had an initial offer extended to him, and then we read about the rescission. What he's particularly unhappy about is the manner in which the rescission was handled, and also the obvious, I mean, the extremely obvious reasons for it. We read, for example, we can't know the extent to which the Cambridge University Student Union played a role in this. We can know what they said about Peterson, and we can also know that they, the Cambridge University Student Union, pinned to their Twitter account the rescindment announcement 3 minutes before the Faculty of Divinity did so. So it's almost like they knew what was happening. And they say, "We are relieved to hear that Jordan Peterson's request for a visiting fellowship to Cambridge's Faculty of Divinity has been rescinded following further review. It is a political act to associate the university with an academic's work through offers with which legitimize figures such as Peterson. His work and views are not representative of the student body, and as such, we do not see his visit as a valuable contribution to the university, but one that works in opposition to the principles of the university." Now, that's that alone, you could spend a lot of time unpacking that one. It's a political act. So if he had been going around saying the opposite of the things that he says, would they have said it was a political act to bring him? Of course not. It suddenly becomes a political act when ideas that make us uncomfortable get too close to us. He works in opposition to the principles of the university. What? I don't think I've actually heard anyone make that particular criticism of Peterson. I've heard some criticisms. Some are valid, some not. But I've never heard that Peterson works in opposition to the principles of any university or of the university system in general. What exactly would that be? He gives lectures and he teaches and he invites discussion and debate. Well, what would the principles of the university be if not those? How could he be said to be working in opposition to the principles of the university? What would those principles have to be? Just because he's a dissident voice? He's a dissident voice. That makes him in opposition to the principles of the university? Because I can't think of what else it could be. And then we read, his work and views are not representative of the student body. That's precisely why you need him. Because apparently the student body is, if this student union is representative, and that is highly debatable. But let's suppose it is. If the student body is so monolithic that they all agree that this man is somebody we disagree with, that's precisely why they need to hear from him. Because otherwise, their entire academic experience will be the same as everybody else's, namely a four-year echo chamber where they learn some buzzwords and some slogans and they get sent out to the world intellectually and morally clueless. Gee, here was a chance for them to hear somebody, yeah, whose views were not representative of their student body. That's what makes it enriching. That's what makes it valuable for you. I mean, do you have any idea how many lectures I had to sit through in college that were not, quote, representative of me? Practically everything. I lived to tell the tale. Here was one guy who would have been visiting for a little while, and this one guy is one too many for these people. Now, I know Cambridge University can make any decision it wants. I know that. I know what libertarianism is all about. I know that. But what's significant about this, first of all, even though they can make any decision they want, I'm still free to comment on it, right? as libertarians, of course, we're free to comment on anything we want. You're entitled to an opinion on things. This is my opinion on things. But more than that, I think it's revealing because, again, it reminds us, what would these people be like in power? What would they be like if they actually had the reins of power? When you see how impatient they get with even one dissident voice, what does that tell you about what life would be like with these people in charge? And that is something that does touch on libertarianism. That's something that is very, very important for us. And so they say, as such, we do not see his visit as a valuable contribution to the university. Now let's step back a bit and remember that Peterson is probably the most, well, certainly the most popular scholar that Canada's ever produced. And he's had a vast influence already. I mean, how many scholars can say that young people go out of their way to listen to their lectures? Most scholars are doing well if they can get people to show up for their lectures, lectures that they're required to attend more or less because they need to know the information for a grade. How many scholars can say that young people hang on their every word? He's got millions of books sold, over 100 million downloads. And I don't even know if that includes all the interviews he's done, which have many, many, many downloads. And this guy would not be a valuable contribution to the university. It wouldn't even be interesting to you to understand the phenomenon by which one dissident voice becomes this popular and influential. That's not valuable to you. So in other words, you don't want to understand the world around you at all. You just want to understand people who are exactly like you. But apparently there are a lot of people around the world who are different from you, to the point that they follow a quirky academic closely. That doesn't make you a little curious? And the answer is, of course not. Because for the kind of people who populate the Cambridge University Student Union, there is no interest in people unlike themselves, because those people are all backward, ignorant, bigoted, stupid, whatever. I mean, the kind of language that left libertarians use is the kind of language these people use. They're not even human. Their enemies are not even human. They don't have a perspective. The only perspective they could have is white supremacy and sexism. That's what's happened to their brains, that they can listen to a Jordan Peterson and they can't think beyond career-destroying buzzwords. That's as far as their brains will take them. Peterson himself says, "It seems to me that the packed Cambridge Union auditorium, the intelligent questioning associated with my lecture, and the overwhelming number of views the subsequently posted video accrued indicates that there are a number of Cambridge students who are very interested in what I have to say and might well regard my visit, quote, as a valuable contribution to the university," unquote. And he says, "I also have to say, as a university professor concerned with literacy, that the Cambridge University Student Union statement offered to The Guardian borders on the unintelligible, perhaps even crossing the line, as so much ideological puppet babble tends to. What in the world does it mean that, quote, it is a political act to associate the university with an academic's work through offers which legitimize figures such as Peterson?" Then he reminds people of the extent of his reach, because what he's been talking about, what he talks about in this response, are the lectures he gave on the biblical accounts in Genesis, delivered live in Toronto and then posted on YouTube. He says, "Since their posting, beginning in May of 2017, these lectures have received about 10 million hits, as well as an equal or greater number of downloads." He says, "The first lecture alone on the first sentence of Genesis has alone garnered 3.7 million of those, which makes it the most well-received of all the talks I've ever posted online. I've received correspondence in great volume from religious people all over the world, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, and Muslims alike, and an equally large number from atheists, all telling me that my psychological take on the Genesis material resonated very strongly with their faith, or it helped them understand for the first time the value of these stories. You can see this for yourself by reading the comments on the YouTube channel, which are remarkably civilized and positive by modern social media standards. I don't think there is another modern religious / psychological phenomenon or happening that is genuinely comparable. It's also the case that my books, 12 Rules for Life and Maps of Meaning, both rely heavily on Judeo-Christian thinking and are predicated on the idea that the stories that make up such thought constitute the bedrock of our civil, peaceful, and productive society. The former has now sold 3 million copies, 1 million in tongues other than English, and will be translated into 50 languages. The other, a much older book, was recently a New York Times bestseller in audio format. This volume of interest is clear indication of the widespread cross-cultural appeal of the work that I am doing. All right, let's pause right there. This is the main thing that makes the academics crazy. It's not simply that he's a dissident voice. It's he's a dissident voice who's had success that these envious SOBs could only dream of. He's successful, too. He's kicking sand in their faces every time he opens his mouth, and he's wildly successful. These are people who couldn't get somebody to cross the street to listen to them drone on about nothing. And yet, he lectures to packed halls all over the world. They can't stand this. As I get older, I realize that a lot of people are motivated by much baser instincts than I naively assumed as a younger man. People would sometimes say to me, Woods, this person is clearly and obviously motivated by envy. And I would refuse to believe it because I thought that I cannot assume. I have to have incontrovertible evidence before I will assume that somebody's motives are bad. But as I get older, I don't know how ridiculously dumb I was as a younger person. It is overwhelmingly obvious just how often people are motivated by envy. And that is obviously what's happening here. You should see some of the Twitter remarks by academics. It's just a handful, but in response to Cambridge's decision. You know, well, good. You know, they don't want Cambridge to have a popular scholar people actually care about. That's the last thing. That is the last thing these people want. So Peterson says that he's planning to produce a series of lectures on Exodus, and he presumes that these will have equal drawing power. And he thought, well, if I spent time in Cambridge, I'd be able to interact with faculty members who might be interested in speaking with me, as indeed some did when he was there. He could speak to students. It would be an opportunity, a privilege. And he thought that if he collaborated with the Faculty of Divinity on this project, this would be an opportunity of clear mutual benefit. And also, and he thought, I could become more knowledgeable in biblical matters as well, and the resulting lectures would be better. And he says, now that was my paraphrase. He says, now these are his exact words. He says, now the Divinity School has decided that signaling their solidarity with the diversity, inclusivity, equity mob trumps that opportunity, or so I presume. And now here we get into the actual way they went about announcing their decision. He says, you see, I don't yet know because, and this is particularly appalling, I was not formally notified of this decision by any representative of the Divinity School. I heard about the rescinded offer through the grapevine via a colleague and friend, and gathered what I could about the reasons from social media and press coverage, assuming that CUSU, which is Cambridge University Student Union, has at least something to do with it. Now, I personally think that just calling him Jordan Peterson in this tweet from the Cambridge Divinity School is meant to be disrespectful. If they had invited some other distinguished scholar, of course it would have been Professor So-and-so has been invited. This was just Jordan Peterson. They hate him. You could just these people hate him. And then he says, I'd also like to point out something else. As I already noted, the Divinity faculty tweeted their decision to rescind, which is pretty juvenile, if you ask me, consciously making this a public issue. This is inexcusable in my estimation, given one, that they did not equally publicize the initial agreement/invitation, which has to be considered an event of equal import, and two, that they implied that I came cap in hand to the school for the fellowship. This is precisely the kind of half-truth particularly characteristic of those who deeply practice to deceive, as the fellowship offer was a consequence of mutual discussion between those who invited me to Cambridge in July and my subsequent formal request, and not something I had dreamed up on my own. And then he says, it's not going to make much difference to my future in some sense. I have more opportunities at the moment than I can keep track of, let alone, let's say, capitalize on. It's a complex and surreally fortunate position to occupy, and I'm not taking it for granted, but it happens to be true. So in other words, look, I'm the best known scholar you're ever going to have set foot on your university campus in terms of my following around the world. And I can do pretty much anything I want, anywhere I want. So if Cambridge doesn't want me, my life doesn't exactly come to a screeching halt. So again, just what's great about him is also, apart from any of whatever his contributions are, what's great about him is he kicks that sand back in their faces. So yeah, they try to kick it at him with their dinky little feet. And then he comes back with a snowplow going through the sand, you know, burying them with it. What these people are accustomed to is people bending the knee and people kowtowing to them and apologizing when they demand an apology and kissing their rear ends and whatever. And when they hand down a solemn decision, why you're supposed to accept it quietly. And instead, he blows it up and makes an international incident out of it. They don't know what to do with a guy like this. Doesn't he know that he's supposed to understand that he has been duly chastened by our university? And no, he doesn't feel that way. He does not act that way at all. He comes right at them. And then he publicizes what happened all over the place. See, this isn't what we peons are supposed to do. We're supposed to know our places. These people at these universities, you see, these are our wise betters. And when we are chastened by them, why, we are to sit in our seats and fold our hands. And instead, he kicks over the desk. That's what's great about the guy. You know, stop missing the point. This is the point. Then he goes on to say, I think it is deeply unfortunate that the authorities at the Divinity School in Cambridge decided that kowtowing to an ill-informed, ignorant, and ideologically addled mob trumped participating in an extensive online experiment in mass Christian and psychological education. Given the continued decline in church attendance, the rise in atheistic or agnostic sentiment, the increasing irrelevance of theological education, and the collapse in interest in such matters among young people, wiser and more profound decisions might have been made. But you know what? There are no doubt some decent folks at Cambridge Divinity School, but you know, at most of these divinity schools, the last thing these people care about is declining church attendance. I mean, this, honestly. And they know they're teaching themselves out of a job. They know that, but they figure the collapse will come after they're collecting their pensions. But this does not matter to them. Honest to goodness. I spent a lot of time at Union Theological Seminary in New York working on my PhD dissertation at Columbia. And I couldn't have been hanging around people who had less interest in Christianity. I mean, honestly, at least the way it had been understood for thousands of years. These people could not have been less interested in that. And the idea that they would care one whit about declining church attendance, if this meant nothing to them whatsoever. And then Peterson says this, it matters whether people around the world understand these ancient stories. It deeply matters. We are becoming unmoored because we no longer share the structure these stories undergird. This is psychologically destabilizing. It's producing a pathological and desperate nihilism that is increasingly common. And at the same time, a pronounced proclivity for the ideological certainty that mimics but cannot replace true religious belief. And so, in other words, people now are drifting off into the salvific potential of political ideologies, which is a very, very bad thing. And then the conclusion, again, just goes to show what a force the guy is, that he will not back down. When I first saw his videos, before I first had him on back on whatever episode it was, the first time I had Peterson on. In fact, let me look it up right now. It was episode 773, tomwoods.com/773. Then I had him on again for episode 800. When I first had him on, it was only just breaking. His celebrity status was not yet established, but the story was kind of just breaking. And when you would see him speak on YouTube, I wouldn't say that he was unsure of himself. He was sure of himself, but he wasn't this ferocious presence that he's become now, where he'll take on the Cambridge Divinity School faculty in devastating fashion like this. So he concludes as follows. I think the Faculty of Divinity made a serious error of judgment in rescinding their offer to me. And I'm speaking about those unnamed persons who made that specific decision. I think they handled publicizing the rescindment in a manner that could hardly have been more narcissistic, self-congratulatory, and devious. I believe that the parties in question don't give a damn about the perilous decline of Christianity, and I presume in any case that they regard that faith in their propaganda-addled souls as the ultimate manifestation of the oppressive Western patriarchy, despite their hypothetical allegiance to their own discipline. I think that it is no bloody wonder that the faith is declining, and with it the values of the West as it fragments, with cowards and mountebanks of the sort who manifested themselves today at the helm. I wish them the continued decline in relevance over the next few decades that they deeply and profoundly and diligently work toward and deserve. Yes. Great. Finally. Finally somebody stands up to these frauds and cowards. Not cowards. They're not really cowards. In some sense, they are belligerent totalitarians. But they are cowards in the sense that they don't really dare face opposing ideas. I mean, why else would you make sure to keep opposing ideas completely out of the university? Even though the vice chancellor of the University of Cambridge said that one very specific aspect of openness is being inclusive and open to diversity in all its forms. And he included in that diversity of interests and beliefs. Yeah, really? Okay, how is that manifested in your university? Now, incidentally, as I said, there are a lot of people who have an interest in Peterson who aren't necessarily, you know, out of the conservative movement, let's say. They're just ordinary people who are interested in what he's saying. And there are also other scholars who are interested in what he's saying. And Peterson realizes that. So it's not just that, okay, well, Cambridge University is going to have to deal with a few right-wing trolls on Twitter for a few days as a result of this. There will be an uproar internally about this. And there will be angry letters from alumni. I mean, he's basically made a mess for them to go clean up. And again, this is what makes him so exciting to watch. He's just fun to watch. It's fun to see how he does this. So I say, keep on keeping on. No, he's not a carbon copy of Tom Woods, and he's not strictly a libertarian, and he doesn't agree with everything I have to say on economics, and he doesn't always phrase things the way I would, and sometimes he's not tough enough and whatever. I understand all those things. But talk about missing the forest for the trees here. This guy is a lightning rod for a reason. And incidentally, if the claim is, well, his scholarly background isn't strong enough, I mean, despite being a Harvard professor for a while, and despite all his actual scholarly writing, I remind you that Spike Lee was invited to teach a course at Harvard, and in fact did so. I'm not sure I buy that because the whole his scholarly credentials aren't quite great enough. I think that kind of qualification seems to come up only selectively, let's say. So I don't really buy it. But also, I think he's distinguished enough given his scholarly work. But then also, let's bear in mind, why is there this idea that the professor, the scholar, should be so remote from the general public that basically it's a novelty when the public has ever heard of a professor? That what you should be writing are ponderous tomes that nobody in his right mind would want to spend time with. Why is that the model that we want to hold up? That they're like some separate priestly class of some sort, you know, with knowledge that is not to be shared with the rest of the general public or even written in a way that a normal person could comprehend, but must be in some strange dialect or something, you know, that's just a unique jargon that's unique to a particular discipline. Why are we holding that up as the great model? Or I remember it used to be the case that at Harvard, whoever won the teaching award every year, it was like some curse. You would be turned down for tenure. So I'm pretty sure Alan Brinkley, who became my dissertation director at Columbia, he was teaching at Harvard. He got the teaching award, and then they turned him down for tenure. And it just kept happening. Now, I don't know, just to me, you would think that that would be a good thing, right? That wouldn't be the kiss of death. So the whole model behind which they're hiding here is also a bizarre one that I don't understand why people flock to or think is worth celebrating. So I'm going to link at tomwoods.com/1367 to the text of Peterson's response to the Cambridge University or Cambridge Divinity School, Faculty of Divinity there. So you can read it for yourself. And it's a model for how you handle a situation like this. Because he has hit back hard. He indirectly will monetize this. And remember, his exact words to Joe Rogan were, "I have figured out how to monetize the social justice warriors." That is so beautiful. I mean, I am but a pupil at the feet of the master when it comes to this. But I've also gotten pretty good at that. I've been attacked several times just in the past week by left libertarians, and I've come out in the black every single time. Okay, I've been able to monetize that every single time. So the more they attack me, the more prosperous I am. That is amazing. I mean, for all the problems we have with the internet these days, that is a situation none of us could have been in 20 years ago. And that's an advance. All right, so check out tomwoods.com/1367. And make sure also to join us on the Contra Cruise. I mean, come on vacation with me. I mean, let's go to Alaska together. How could that not be fun? We're going to have a great time. We have games we play every year that are hysterical that you'll absolutely love. Gene Epstein will be with us. Bob Murphy and I are going to be doing a debate together. Well, against each other. We have a resolution where we strongly disagree. And Gene, who moderates debates kind of for a living these days, will be moderating that debate. What fun it's going to be. So do please check that out at contracruise.com. Book your cabin as soon as you can, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.